What's up, guys? I'm Chris Cavanaugh from the University of Notre Dame. You're listening to DFly and Dixie Podcast.
Welcome back to the DFly and Dixie Podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my Hopkins homeboy, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Got a big show here. We'll look back at a couple of key midweek games and look ahead to another handful of top 20 marquee matchups. And we'll sit down with Notre Dame star Chris Cavanaugh as the number one ranked Fighting Irish get set to battle against the number three ranked Duke Blue Devils. Lots to get to, so Dixie, let's get it. Can you believe it's April already? It's like this, it's like almost can start looking to, like, I've seen a lot of lax bracketology or coming out in the last couple of weeks.
It's that time of year. Our production team on the Big Ten Network for our Sunday night game this past week, the Maryland Penn State game, actually had an RPI graphic, a slate, and they showed it to me in pre-production. And I'm like, you know what? I just don't feel like we're there yet where we have to start. You know, I feel like others in the sport start talking about that stuff like in February, you know, but I think this week we're going to use it because, believe it or not, we're only a month left in the regular season. If that, 3 weeks, maybe. But yeah, it's that time of year. Still waiting for the daggone weather to get consistently warm. The weather we've had in Baltimore the last few days, heavy, heavy rain, just chilly, cold. Oof, I think this weekend's supposed to be cold again, but I did see the extended forecast. By, I think Sunday actually is supposed to be in the 60s. So maybe we're turning a corner this weekend after Saturday, of course, when we all freeze our, you know, what's off.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to Chris Cavanaugh. Notre Dame has four regular season games left.
That's one of the questions we asked Chris. They only play, well, they have 11 regular season games scheduled. And then if they should make the ACC tournament, if they play a semifinal and a final, that would give them 13. But yeah, when you look at other teams that, you know, 13, 14 games right off the bat, not counting their conference tournament, some teams play as many as 16, 17 regular season games. It is a smaller sample size.
You are correct. And as we turn the calendar to April, that four games is that's what a lot of teams have left. You know, they play this week, the 6th, the 13th, the 20th, and the 27th weekend, and then they're into their conference tournament. So these teams that do play 15 games, they've played 11 already, you know, and they have their four big conference weekends left, and it will be right around the corner, right around.
Well, Syracuse only has two regular season games left in the month of April, 13th and the 20th.
It's wild. Yeah.
Only two.
So let's get to that. They had a big midweek game this week that, again, Tuesday night was a great night for some reason, there wasn't a lot of other sports on. And I felt like a lot of people, including in the Flynn household, were watching lacrosse on Tuesday night. You know, I turned it on up. So started watching the Lehigh Princeton game. We'll talk to that in a minute. But the Cornell Syracuse game, not having all these key games at noon on Saturday is great for lacrosse fans. And this one was fantastic. Finish in the Cornell Syracuse game.
It was, but before we get to that, we have to rewind a little bit. Maryland Penn State Sunday night. You want to talk about a unique time slot, 7 o'clock. I haven't gotten the numbers yet, but I have to imagine, hoping that that game beat the Saturday Rutgers Hopkins game that I was a part of the broadcast, which is the second most watched game of the 2024 season behind the Syracuse-Maryland game back on a Saturday night in February. But Maryland come from behind win, not only was able to win that game, I think that saved the Terps season for the moment. That has a potential to turn the season around. How about Virginia-Harvard? Virginia was down 10-6 scored the last seven goals of the game to win 13-10, including a goalie goal from Nunes
That was
running the
amazing.
length of the field.
No, the go-ahead goal.
Right.
In late in the fourth quarter. That was fantastic.
It was amazing. Sticking on the theme of goalies, Jack Frassian from Penn State made a couple of brilliant saves, including one between his ankles. But that was, you could just, man, Maryland was getting really good looks, and Frassian was bailing Penn State out. Eventually, the levee broke, and you know, things got out of hand for Penn State. Maryland scoring six goals in the fourth quarter to win that game. But Liam Entenmann, shades of Larry Quinn from the 1984 NCAA championship game against Syracuse, a post-to-post save with the stick, one for the ages. So some pretty nice goaltending this weekend. We were treated to that. But, okay, so Tuesday, I've got to give a tip of the cap to Easter food. So Easter Sunday, we celebrated Easter as a family. We went out to dinner on Saturday night with my my mother-in-law and then my parents, my wife, and then Matt being local. Loyola played on Friday, beat Lehigh last Friday night. He was able to join us. And then Easter Sunday, I had to leave around noon, and Matt was coming with some of his roommates, teammates, over for Easter dinner. So I didn't get Easter dinner. So then when I came home on Monday, I had a colonoscopy on Tuesday. And not trying to get anybody in my personal business, but the importance of being screened.
Yeah. Did it last year. And it's, you know, you get to a certain point in your life and you got to do it. You got to do it.
Exactly.
And it's not as bad. It's not as bad as people make it sound, right? It's not fun.
The prep is no fun.
It's not fun. It's not fun, but it's not as bad as it, like, right. You know.
Yeah. So, and I've had a couple of colonoscopies prior to this one due to, you know, medical history, family history, that kind of thing. So I knew what I was getting myself into. But the day before the colonoscopy, in addition to the prep, which is later in the day, you have to be on a clear liquid diet. So when I got home and I saw the leftovers, some ham, mac and cheese, sweet potato casserole, nice salad that my wife had made, I couldn't eat. And so when I got out of the procedure, everything's good, by the way, which is great.
That's great. That's good to hear.
And I could eat. And actually the nurse, when they took me back and they were getting me ready for the procedure, she goes, "So what are you going to eat when you get done? You know, where's your breakfast?" And I said, "I'm going home and I'm eating Easter food." So, and I've dogged Easter for years on this show, including our last give and go a couple weeks ago. I got to tell you, man, that meal smacked. That was so good. The ham, but the sweet potato casserole, the mac and cheese. So good.
All right. I have to, there's a 10 pound ham sitting in my fridge right now that I feel the same way. I went over to my brother's house for Easter. He hosted Easter and it was great, but it's like a little buffet. We eat early at like 2 o'clock or something, but my daughter got sick early on Sunday morning. So my wife didn't go. And then my son didn't want to go. So they missed out on the meal. So I went to the store on Monday or something and they had ham on sale. So I have a giant ham and then I got all the fixings, and I think this weekend I'm gonna make my family's Easter dinner, and I can't wait to dig into that ham. All
right, I'm not a huge Easter dinner fan because ham is the least of my holiday meats, the favorite, but boy, it was so good on early Tuesday afternoon. It was so good.
So one of the best things is ham really carries over. Like turkey, you gotta smother it in gravy. It's not good the next couple of days.
That's not true.
It's not as good as ham. Ham just is consistently.
Well, that's because ham is just loaded with salt.
Sure. You know, that's what makes it so
preservatives.
But my point is, like, ham will last you, and the leftovers from Easter are amazing. But when you go to someone else's house, you don't really get to take them with you. So that's why I can't wait for my.
Well, and there wasn't a whole lot left for me after, you know, not only did the hyenas come over and have a great meal, but they took most of the leftovers.
I thought they were called greyhounds.
They are gray. They're greyhounds on the field, but they're hyenas in the dining room. That is for sure.
Well, I will have plenty of leftovers for my 10 pound ham that I'm going to feed to my wife and my two elementary school children who don't like ham. So I'll hook up. Maybe you should come over for dinner on like Sunday night or something like that.
I'd love to, but I will be in Ann Arbor, Rutgers at Michigan, Sunday
Oh
night,
yeah.
7 o'clock, Big Ten Network, another Sunday night game.
All
So
right.
I'll have to come over after that.
Okay. So let's get back to these Tuesday night games. Cornell, Syracuse, double OT. CJ Kearse wins it for the Big Red. And that's a big win for Cornell and the Ivy League a little bit when you start talking about RPI.
Without a doubt. And I have to admit, so after the colonoscopy, I'm not allowed to do a whole lot. Can't drive because anesthesia was involved. So I did a little bit of work in the afternoon, some phone calls with customers and that kind of thing. But then was able to watch some MIAA opened up on Tuesday. So I was able to watch some of those streams flying around YouTube. And then when I realized that not only was it Cornell Syracuse, but Lehigh Princeton, like, oh, great. My wife was not happy because we're in season four of Yellowstone, which is an awesome show. It is so good. So I told her, I'm like, look, there's a couple games on tonight I want to watch. She goes, okay, we won't. And then she came in at like 5 to 7. It's like, okay, you ready for Yellowstone? I'm like, I told you, there's a couple of games. She's like, oh, okay, that's right. She was disappointed, but she sat down with me to watch. So we started watching Syracuse Cornell. And right out of the gate, it was what, 4-0? Cornell looked like they didn't even have a pulse. So I said, and I don't know, you just hit a saturation point. And I'm like, all right, let's watch Yellowstone. So we turn on Yellowstone, we watch one episode. Like, we normally watch two. Like, we're only going to watch one, then I want to get back to the games. She said, okay. Turn the game back on. Syracuse was still, well in control of that game. But the Lehigh Princeton game, Lehigh was up by 2 goals, I believe, at halftime on the Tigers, right?
They were up 7-5 at halftime and then scored the first goal of the third quarter. It was 8-5 Lehigh at one point.
Yeah. So I actually watched that game. And then during breaks, timeouts, whatever, I'd flip over to Cornell Syracuse. And you could tell the scoring, the tempo, everything with the Cuse Big Red game that was going to go longer than the Lehigh Princeton game. So I watched Lehigh Princeton. Princeton, you realize they're going to win the thing with about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. So I flip off of that. I get over to Syracuse Cornell. By that time, the Big Red had really chipped away. So I was like, okay, let's settle in. What an entertaining game. If you want to watch defense, that is not the game for you. The Will Mark was under fire until he gave up what became the Cornell one goal lead with just over 10 seconds left. You're like, okay, wow, the Big Red are going to win this thing. And then Syracuse goes down, and it was almost like Cornell rolled out the red carpet to the goal for this guy. It was Sam English, right? Scored the game tying goal.
Yeah, so Jake Stevens wins the ground ball on the faceoff, throws it over to English, who runs down the right side, and he just roasts the short stick midfielder. I don't know what the guy was doing. He had like a 10-yard head start on him and just ran right by him and scored the game tying goal with a second left.
Yeah, so and that opened up the door for overtime. We saw some really good offense, really great goaltending. I thought the defenses played better in the overtime periods, but then CJ Kearse with the game winner. Wow, what an entertaining game. That was just a terrific game between two really good teams. And what came out of that game, and I didn't realize it again because I didn't watch it, was a coach was ejected. Offensive coordinator for Syracuse, Pat March, was ejected at the end of the first quarter. And that's big news because that is a very, very rare occurrence
Sure.
in college lacrosse. They
Surprisingly, if you've ever been on a sideline, you hear some things, people yelling at the referees, and
it's a it, that's
it's
a
a little
good point you
surprising.
bring up. It's a very good point. Because, okay, so the official word is Pat March was ejected from the game because he made contact with an official. And kudos to the crew for taking the actions that they did. I don't know if it's this year, but this year I'm getting more commentary from people saying, "You're a ref, right?" And I go, "Yeah." And they go, "Why aren't there more flags on benches? Why isn't there more discipline being meted out to coaching staffs?" And I said, "What do you mean?" They're like, "These benches are just out of control, especially assistant coaches." I said, "Well, look, here's this and that and the other thing." And these are people that are fans of certain programs or certain teams. And they're like, "I can't believe our head coach or our assistant coaches behave that way. They really need to be." So maybe this turns the tide in terms of behavior. I can tell you as an official, you talk to the head coach all the time, as long as there's a respectful exchange. The coach deserves your attention. Assistant coaches, you can have a dialogue with them, but again, it's got to be even above and beyond the respect that a head coach gives to a referee. But if assistant coaches act up, good officials have no time for mouthy, disrespectful assistant coaches. And I'm not saying that anyone fits that bill in particular, including Pat March. I've never officiated a Syracuse game with Coach March on the sideline. But obviously, there was an unfortunate situation. The referees took action. And kudos to the crew for, if in fact what was explained happened. And I think when situations like this happen, think about players. You see a player whack another player late. Who normally gets caught? The
The
second
second
guy
guy, yeah.
retaliating. And that's typically what fans see. And that's what typically what referees see. So you come down on the second player who retaliated. I think that happens oftentimes because as this was going down, there were boos from the crowd. But probably no one saw what happened. They just
Yeah.
saw the aftermath of what happened.
I didn't see the contact. I did see some post where I think Cornell was offsides and they scored a goal,
I
and
do
he
believe
was
that was
upset
what
about
was,
that,
yeah,
and
what
that,
triggered the
and then
emotion.
something happened, and I guess there was contact with an official, and he was ejected from the game. So what are the implications of this? Does he have to miss a game, or is there some penalty that comes to him other than just having to leave the game during the game, or
So that I'm not sure of.
just the
I do know when a
conference?
player is ejected, that player typically has to sit out the next game. That will be a decision for the ACC and or Syracuse University. So typically when a player gets ejected, that player is disqualified from the next athletic contest. I'm not sure how that happens or what the remedy is for coaches, if anything, but I have been told that'll be up to the conference as well as the school.
And I don't want that to overshadow what an awesome game this was. And I don't think it has or will,
No, but it
because it
is a very
was,
unique situation that
yeah,
came
for
out of
sure.
that game.
And but again, a really big win for the Big Red. And we're going to talk to Chris Kavanaugh in a second. Let's bring him in a minute. But Cornell and Notre Dame are getting together next weekend on Long Island in the final event of the Corrigan College Lacrosse Live Series. And this is going to be a big game. And it's going to be at Long Island University. And from what I understand, they've sold a lot of tickets for this. So if you want to go, you should get your tickets now, because there's no better way to experience college lacrosse up close and personal than to be a part of the action for the Cornell lacrosse game on April 14th on Long Island. The game will be played at Bethpage Federal Credit Union Stadium on the campus of Long Island University. And this is a big time top 10 matchup. The Big Red and Irish face off at 12:30 p.m. in the third and final event of the College Lacrosse Live Series. Tickets are available for adults at $25 and for youth fans ages 12 and under for just $12. Fans can also purchase tickets for a VIP hospitality experience that includes sideline access for the game, food, and beverage. To learn more about the series and purchase tickets, visit collegelacrosselive.com and get your tickets today. Again, this game probably will sell out, so get your tickets now. collegelacrosselive.com. Cornell versus Notre Dame, where lacrosse is up close and personal. A reminder that the D Fly Dixie podcast is brought to you by the Simplicity Group. And with that said, let's bring in our guest this week, Chris Kavanaugh. Our guest today is Notre Dame junior attackman Chris Kavanaugh, who leads the Fighting Irish in scoring. Notre Dame prepares for its much-anticipated game at number 3-ranked Duke on Sunday at noon. Chris, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having us. Happy to be here. Looking forward to talking to you guys.
Chris, it's always fun to sit down with you. You know, the question, first time speaking with anyone from Notre Dame in 2024, you guys are coming off the program's first national championship. In formulating what I wanted to talk about, instead of asking you how it felt, how hard is it to win a national championship in this day and age at the Division I level in men's lacrosse?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think first you have to have good leadership from top to bottom, not only upperclassmen, but lowerclassmen. And now you see across like all college across, every team is really good and anyone can win at any moment. So just having the consistency every day in practice and making sure each week of practice leading up to the game on Saturday is perfect. The intensity is there. And it's a grind. It takes everyone on your team full out effort for every day of practice until the last day of the game on Memorial Day. But yeah, it's hard. It comes with a lot of luck and a lot of hard work, I would say.
Coming into this season, we could think about the fall or we could think about first day of spring practice back in January. How was the mindset different for the team coming in as a defending national champions, being the hunted versus a team, a program looking for their first national title?
Yeah, so everyone knows that we didn't make the tournament 2 years ago, so we had a big chip on our shoulder going in. We got two vets from Yale, Tevin Fake. And then we won our national championship and had a great summer of celebrating with our teammates. And then coming back, we didn't know what to do. Like, this was the first time we ever did it. Coach's first time. And he took a good approach. A lot of guys were banged up. So he took like a simple approach at it, practice a couple of days a week, lift, but he didn't really bang us really hard. But then once it came winter time and preseason, I think he kind of buckled down. So we have to start ramping it up here. And then obviously losing Tev as a leader and Liam, Pat, and Yak still here. And then Dobson as another captain, just like added another piece of our want to win and just remembering like what it takes to actually get to Memorial Day. And I think like a flip switched when we lost to Georgetown. And that was a really good piece of like our wake up call. And like, we're not the national champions anymore. Like, that was last year. We got to move on and create a new identity for this team, this 2024 team. And I think the Georgetown loss was good for us, honestly.
Chris, the Irish are ranked number one in the Inside Lacrosse Media poll this week, 6-1 on the season. How would you characterize the first half of the season for the Irish?
I think it's been good. I think we're finding our stride right now, honestly. We've had a 3-week stretch of really, really intense, good, hard practices. But I think going into each game, we've been very prepared. Coach is very hard on us during the week to stay balanced and organized in what we do. But I think so far, besides that one loss, we've kept our heads up and we've just been ready for each opponent, going hard in the film room. I know our team preaches a lot of film, a lot of extra work after practices, and I think that's showing in the stats and in the win column. So I think another piece is our team culture is exceptional this year. Last year was totally different and everyone loved each other. Everyone was so tight. And I think it's carried over to this year. Like, that is the standard and what we hold each other accountable to. So I think our team culture has played a big part in our success this year.
Your mom and dad are both athletes. Volleyball player and a hockey player. You've got four brothers, one of which played before you and Pat at Notre Dame. And then you have a sister who played soccer in college. What was it like growing up, Kavanaugh?
I got a lot of time off of school to go to a lot of those games. I think I missed like every Friday of every school week in the spring, and sometimes in the fall. But it was good, honestly. Just like growing up as a kid, I was exposed to Matt's locker room, Brendan's locker room, Kevin's hockey locker room. So I kind of had a really different experience as a normal 9-year-old. Kind of getting exposed to the older kid life. Like Pat always let me hang out with his friends, even Brendan, and I was like the little kid going around like, who's this guy? But yeah, I think the biggest thing was being exposed at such a young age to like a high level, not only like playing, but like a team, being part of something bigger than yourself. So that it taught me a lot of big life lessons being around my older siblings.
I want to stay there for a second. Like you, I'm from a big Irish Catholic family. I also have four brothers and one sister. I never really got to play with any of my brothers on teams that we played on. But you follow Matt and Pat to Notre Dame. Like, did you feel any pressure of following in their footsteps, or were you like gung-ho excited to do that? And then the second part of that question is like, how do you motivate each other?
Yeah, so when we were younger, me and Pat, like Pat, Matt was a superstar talent in hockey and lacrosse, and then he went out to Notre Dame, and helped them get to the Final Four a bunch. And me and Pat had a lot to look up to, a lot to play for. But Pat was undersized recruit, so he didn't have that much pressure going in, and he blossomed being a superstar. And then like I watched him play very well at the high level. And then it was kind of like I was the last one, so no one really knew what was going to play out, but I was highly recruited. But I never put like pressure on myself to be better than any of them. I just had to be the best version of myself. And then to your second question, how do we motivate each other? I feel like this year has been the biggest one because Pat had surgery. I didn't play this fall. So it was kind of like this is our last time together. No matter like how bad your day is going, you got to bring a smile on your face and just be happy because there's a limited amount of time we have together, and this is what we dreamed of. This is what we were doing as little kids, just looking in the locker room, seeing Matt's friends playing. So like we got only got a month or two left, so we just got to put a smile on our face and enjoy it all and take it all in.
For a long time, obviously Kevin Corrigan for decades has been the head coach at Notre Dame, but his defensive coordinator, former defensive coordinator Jerry Byrne, was almost as well known, if not sometimes more well known. Two assistants that you have now, Ryan Wellner and Chris Wojcik. How would you best describe those two? Because when it's a televised game, any information shared on Notre Dame coaches, it's typically Coach Corrigan, and that's kind of it. I did see during the last broadcast, the crew did focus on Coach Wojcik and what he's brought to the table. How would you best describe Wellner and Wojcik?
Yeah, I'll start with Wojcik on the offensive side. So I'm with him a bunch. He's so passionate about his job and everything he does. He comes into the locker room every day looking to get everyone on our team better, not just on the offensive side. Like he comes in with clips every day for our goalies. He's the goalie coach, and for especially the offensive guys. But I would say, like, I don't know the exact number, but I know Notre Dame was averaging like what, 10 to 12 goals a game. Now we're averaging 16, 18 goals. Like he's brought so much to our offensive scheme. It's incredible. It's honestly fun to be around because he loves the game. He's so passionate. It's just a lot of heartwarming energy. And then Wellner on the defensive side, I feel like a lot of guys respect him. He's been great for our defense. I know Coach Corrigan's on the defensive end with him a lot, and he lets Chris do his own thing with the O guys. So I feel like Coach Wallner and Oregon have a good relationship with the D guys, and they're doing a really good job down there, I would say.
On the offensive side, Coach Wojcik and your man up unit is scoring at a super high clip, 75%. I think you're 15 out of 20 on the season. What's the keys to your success in man up unit situations?
Yeah, so coach preaches just principles of offense and our man up. So we don't have any set plays. We'll never have a set play. We sit in a 3-3 and just move the ball and just like make seam passes, move into spots. I know he's always preaching get to your spots earlier rather than later. So I would say just having really good, hard fundamental principles in a system where guys can operate at a high level is kind of all you need. And he puts trust in us in everything we do. That's his big thing. He trusts us no matter if we make a bad play, we make a mistake. But yeah, I would say just having good principles is kind of the benefactor of our success.
That AMO is at 75%. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I know kids were a little pissed at me at the end when I didn't shoot it for Syracuse, but I didn't really want to be that guy padding the stats or like 4 seconds left shooting at the goal. Kids were mad at me though for messing up our percentage.
And you know what? Karma is a very powerful thing. So probably going to work out that you made that decision ultimately. So you and your brother, for good reason, the headliners offensively for Notre Dame, but you have a lot of other weapons. What are some of the guys that you play with and some of the guys that help you get the job done?
I'll start with Devin. He's been a very good addition to our offense. He's like a Swiss Army knife. He's always cutting, moving around the ball in every way. And then Jake, obviously everyone knows the inside finisher. He finishes everything. And then Dobby, outside gunslinger. I know they've been shorting him, and we've been trying to work with him a bunch, but he's stayed patient. He picks his spots in really good times, and I think he'll start to heat up soon. He always does. And I have a lot of trust in him. And then finally, Jordan. He's got a crazy schedule right now. He's catching wide receiver routes at 6 a.m. every day, and then going to lacrosse practice and playing on Saturday. So I got a lot of respect for him. He's been a great addition to our offense, starter of the offense coming out of the box. And then another kid I'd like to shout out is Max Boosenkel, sophomore middie. He's kind of stepped up in a big role. He was kind of on the third, fourth line heading into preseason, and then just gritted out every shift. Play smart lacrosse, never makes a dumb play. And he's been playing really well for us. So
Down the other end of the field, Liam Entman, first team All-American goalie, anchors your defensive unit. Who are some of the other guys on the defense that need a good shout out?
I'd say, thankfully, first of all, like Chris Conlon coming back from his desk job. We've been hounding him all year because we knew he had an extra year, and a lot of people didn't know that. And then, kind of like a week or two before we were coming back for preseason, he made the decision and kind of got the pieces rolling and where for him to stay and all that stuff. But he's a number one cover guy. He's a lockdown defender, and he's been so good for us for the last 2 years. So, that's everything good to say about him. And then, obviously, freshman Sean Light, he's going to be a stud. I think people still have to start respecting him. He's been locking down anyone's first guy. He did a great job versus Maryland, Spilina. So he's been great for us. He'll be an All-American for 4 years, I think. And then Marco, the general, he's been great. I know him and Will Gal, sophomore D, have been switching in and out of that role. They have a good relationship, and they've done a really good job of doing what they do, of calling out the D, where to go, where to slide. And you need that as like a number one or two cover guy, and where's your two slide and stuff like that. So, and then our short stick D middie rope unit is unbelievable. They go up and down the field like it's their job, and they lock up kids, and they get attacked all game. That's where you go from is your short sticks, and I think they do a good job of sharing the wealth. Like anyone could be on a short stick at any time. So I think Ben Ramsey is one of the best ones, and then Carter Parlett, obviously Nick Harris, Christian Locker, all of them. They're so good, and they're the heart and soul of our D because they get attacked all game.
A lot of lacrosse fans make note that Notre Dame doesn't play that many games relative to other programs. You guys have 11 regular season games scheduled, not counting the ACC tournament. If you go to the ACC tournament, advance to the championship, that'll give you 13, where other programs play, 14, 16 games. Is that something you guys ever think about? Or what's it like not to play as many games as maybe some of the other programs?
Yeah, kids on our team definitely think about it, but I think coach does it strategically. We play the best teams in the country every weekend, so it takes a toll on your body to get ready for another Saturday game against Maryland, Duke, UVA. Like you have to be ready to go, and to have a mid-season week game and then go play another high caliber team is hard. And I think that's coach's idea of we play the best teams. Even though we don't play a lot of teams, I mean, you just have to win. And obviously, when I was a freshman, we were 8-4, got off to a 2-4 start. It hurt us. That what you're talking about hurt us. But like, you just got to win games. That's all we think about is winning the next game mindset. And obviously, we don't like a lot of kids will have like 35 points before we even have our first game. Which is kind of funny, but no one on our team really thinks about that. It's just another factor.
Let's talk about your next game this Sunday. The Irish travel to play number three ranked Duke. What will be the keys for a Notre Dame win over the Blue Devils?
Sticking to our game, playing simple. I know going on the road is always tough going into another venue, but keeping it simple, sticking to our game plan. I think we match up pretty well versus Duke. We have ever since like I was on the team, I haven't lost to them, so we got to keep it that way. But I know Pat and Kenny go at it. I'm interested to see the matchup versus Brennan because Chris had that last year. So we just got to do a good job on him to stick together, and I think we'll be good.
All right. Can we get you some quick hitters here? Some first question. What's your go-to food spot in or around the Notre Dame's campus?
Go to food spot. Is this like every day or occasion?
Every day.
Probably DCO Cafe.
What is your favorite Notre Dame team to watch?
Probably the football team or the hockey team.
If Mark or I walked into the Notre Dame locker room right now, which song would we most likely hear playing?
Rufus Du Sol.
What's your favorite road venue to play in?
Last year at Navy, it was a cool stadium I played in. But in the ACC, probably Virginia.
Favorite all-time athlete?
That's a good one. I'd probably say, let's see, probably Mark Messier.
Which Kavanaugh brother does the best impression of Coach Corrigan?
None of us have really done that, but I can say kids on our team. I'll shout out Emmett Barger. He does a really good one.
What's the best thing about being from Long Island?
Food.
Who's the funniest guy on the Notre Dame lacrosse team?
I have to go. We got a funny guy, Emmett Barger, last year, but probably I'll give Casey Doyle this one.
TikTok or Instagram?
I don't have TikTok, so Instagram.
Okay. And finally, when Notre Dame hits the road, what's the best road meal or team dinner spot that you guys go to?
We go to a Brazilian place. I'm forgetting the name. We just went to one in Ohio State.
Fogo de Chão?
That might be it.
Like a
It's
Brazilian
just like,
steakhouse place where the meat, you turn the cards over
it's
for like bring
unreal.
more. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Okay. Man, that's good. Usually we get Maggiano's. All right,
Or
Chris.
Mahjong. That was the one I was thinking about too.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, and best of luck to you, the Fighting Irish, this week and throughout the season.
Thanks, guys. Really fun time. Thanks for having me.
And we're back. They have a big game this weekend, Dix. We're going to get to it in a minute on Sunday afternoon. But it was good to hear from him. And I love your question about growing up Kavanaugh.
I mean, you have that big Irish family, and they're super duper competitive and great athletes, and they have an edge to them. And you could see, Matt Kavanaugh played with that edge, and Pat and Chris play with that edge. I was just surprised that he hasn't turned into a goalie, because normally little brother is the one that gets thrown in between the pipes and just gets pelted. But I actually met Chris years ago. He probably doesn't remember this, but when I was coaching, when the kids were younger, he played on a Long Island Express team, or an Express team that we competed against. And then I was doing a game at Notre Dame, and there was a group of kids. This one kid came up and he's like, "Hey, I'm Chris Kavanaugh," something, just like very, very boisterous, very energetic, and that kind of thing. I've always remembered that. But then I touched base with him and Pat last year, doing the championships for Westwood One on radio. We interviewed them together, and they're very just, "Hey, this is who we are. This is what we do. And if you like it, great. If you don't, we could really care less." They're just gritty, tough, talented guys. And they're just kind of like, yeah, this is what we do, and this is how we play. And, we just go out and compete. And yeah, that's, I don't know if I'm being articulating that well enough. It's not a negative thing by any stretch.
Yeah, no,
of the imagination.
I'm following what you're saying. Yeah, they just want to play lacrosse. They really like playing with each other and their teammates. And then they're no nonsense. Speaking of no nonsense, Dix, there's a great slate of games on. And finally, we don't have like eight top 20 matchups that demand attention. We're going to get to talk about some of the other conferences a little bit this week. And we start on Saturday, April 6th in the Ivy League. Number 12, Penn, will go to New Haven to take on number 10, Yale. Penn is 3-0 in the Ivy League. Yale is 2-1. This game's at noon. You can see it on ESPN Plus. First place is on the line.
Yeah, so when we came into last weekend talking about Penn Cornell, it was kind of, okay, Cornell controls their own destiny. They were 2-0, and Penn gets the win. And now you have the Quakers in control of their destiny, if you will. They are 3-0 now. They've beaten Brown, Dartmouth, and then Cornell was their bigger takedown. But the Brown game was competitive. That Penn won 11-6. Dartmouth in the snow globe up in New Hampshire, that was an 11-8 win. And then the overtime win against Cornell. So they go into a Yale. It's at Yale. It'll be in New Haven. A Yale team that's coming off of two wins. They beat Lemoyne, and then they toppled Brown last weekend. So the thing about the Ivy League, Penn's probably the best defensive team. By the way, 11-10 Cornell Penn. I call 11-9, so I just have to give myself a pat on the back. Little Barry Horowitz action, the old wrestler Barry Horowitz. Shout out WrestleMania this weekend, by the way. The walk-up songs from last week.
I got a playlist. Somebody sent me a playlist of the walk-up songs that we talked about for Spotify, and I just haven't posted it yet. I will post this.
Okay, do that. Yeah. I wonder if there's some WWE themes in there of wrestlers. That'd be fun.
Whatever songs we talked about are on there.
Okay, got you. But yeah, two offenses that are terrific, and two defenses that you can score on. So this could be another 16-15, 17-15 kind of game. And whoever wins it is a toss-up, because I do believe the margin of separation between these Ivy teams is razor thin.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'll just lean towards the home team in some of these matchups. Dix, in the Atlantic 10, There's a big game. Number 20, St. Joseph's, moves into the top 20 this week. They're 6-3, 1-0 in the league. They won their first Atlantic 10 game, and they'll be at UMass, who's also 1-0 in the Atlantic 10, 5-4 on the season. This game is at 1 o'clock.
So the Hawks started the season 0-3, and they've won 6 in a row, including a huge win over Penn a couple weeks ago, 12-7, beat Providence in overtime. And then they throttled High Point, you know, a team coming off of a big come-from-behind win against the University of North Carolina. So I think a lot of people felt like without the face-off man, Zach Cole, that St. Joe's had hit a hit a speed bump this year, but they can still score score a lot of goals. Levi Anderson is a great player, and you know they're going against one of the best goaltenders in the country in Matt Note. When you look at St. Joe's, Levi Anderson, but you got Carter Page, Matt Bomber, you know. These are guys, Jesse Jason, these are guys all with over 20 points. So they're very balanced. And you know, this UMass team is a little bit more defense-oriented. This will be a really good game. That's going to go a long way towards the seeding in the Atlantic 10.
First place is on the line in the Atlantic Sun when Bellarmine travel out to Colorado to take on Air Force. Bellarmine is 7-4 overall, 3-1 in the A-Sun. Air Force is 4-0 in the A-Sun. This game will be at 1 o'clock. It's a big game.
When we talk about programs that have turned it around and that are on an upward trajectory, Bellarmine is one of them. Quinnipiac is another. So this is a Bellarmine team. Open the season with a 20-12 loss to Duke. Okay, that's supposed to happen, right? They lose to Ohio State then 10-6 in a game that was pretty close in through three quarters in Columbus. Then they beat Marquette at home 11-5, lose by a goal to Utah, and they just continue to play really, really good lacrosse. So the Bellarmine Knights against Air Force, a team that has struggled at times this season, but is always a mainstay in their conference, getting things done, typically getting to the postseason. So this will be an entertaining game. You know, Air Force 5-4, lost to St. Joe's 15-11, beat Utah 12-11. So when you look at like kind of commonality there, that is a common opponent, but should be a really entertaining game.
In the Patriot League, the biggest game this weekend is Colgate at number 5 Army. Colgate is up to 6-4 on the season. Army's 8-1. Both teams are 3-1 in the Patriot League. This game will take place at West Point at 3 o'clock.
So I did this game 2 years ago at Mikey Stadium, and Colgate was not having a good season, and Army had to come back to win that game in overtime. Brendan Nickturn was the headliner for the Black Knights at that point. Fast forward 2 years, Colgate beats Penn State at home. They've played a rigorous schedule, and they're in the thick of things. They're in the hunt for the number one seed for the Patriot League tournament. And this is an Army team that had to come from behind and beat North Carolina in Chapel Hill last weekend. This is going to be a double chin strap game. It should be very physical. Not sure what the weather's going to be like. I mean, I feel like the weather's just crummy this time of year, especially when you go up north. And if it's only going to be 52 degrees in the Baltimore area, you know, probably take 10 or 15 degrees off going up north, right off the banks of the Hudson. But this game is you know, such an important game for both teams and could go a long way. You know, BU's in the mix as well. I wouldn't count Loyola out. They play Bucknell this weekend. But Army Colgate could go a long way in determining seeding for the Patriot League tournament.
And the biggest game on Saturday, top 10 matchup at Homewood Field. It's homecoming at Johns Hopkins this weekend. When number 8 Penn State comes to town to take on the number 7 ranked Johns Hopkins Blue Jays at 2 o'clock on ESPNU.
You want to hear old? It's my 30-year reunion, class of 1994.
Are you going to be around for the game?
No. I'm going to, so I have to fly out late to Michigan for the Rutgers-Michigan game on Sunday. So I'm going to go to Matt's game, Loyola Bucknell, 1 o'clock at Ridley. Carolina plays Virginia down in Charlottesville. I think my wife might be going to that one. But no, I won't. And it's also the Fiji Islander.
I plan to be at both. I plan to go to the game and hit the Islander.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah.
I think the most disappointing thing is the weather again. Like homecoming Fiji Islander when it's chilly just doesn't hit the same as when it's
when the weather's nice. It's Hopkins campus in the spring is so nice.
It's gorgeous.
When the weather's good, but it feels like there's like 3 weeks of it and then school's over.
You're right. Yeah, you go Islander, spring fair, you know,
graduation,
lacrosse, a Maryland game. You know, those are like the highlights of spring in at Homewood Field, at least when we went there.
So the Blue Jays,
maybe I'll swing by the Islander.
Should and then get on and hop on a plane and fly out to Michigan. So Hopkins is 2-0, Penn State is 1-1. At one point they look like this could be 2-0 teams. At one point on Sunday night, playing for first place. This is big, man. Both teams need this.
Gigantic game. And, you know, Hopkins got off to a rough start against Michigan, trailing, what, maybe 4-5-1 early in the contest. And they started winning some faceoffs and scoring some goals. Russell Melendez continues his, rebirth. Yeah, absolutely. And Penn State, wow. What a reversal of fortune. They looked like the best team in the country the first 20 minutes of that game Sunday night. They were just in a different gear than Maryland was, racing out to a 6-2 first quarter advantage. And no shade here. Our cameras were cutting to John Tillman, and he kind of looked illustrative of Maryland. Like, they didn't know what hit him. Like, you rarely have you seen a Maryland team just kind of like, whoa, what is this? But credit, all the credit in the world goes to the Terps. They settled down. They chipped away. I thought Logan McNaney was really good in the second quarter, keeping some Penn State shots out of the cage. And then Luke Wehrman just took over in the second half. So if you're Penn State, you've got to just regroup, refocus, wipe that from your memory of a goldfish. Come into Homewood Field, homecoming crowd, decided advantage for Johns Hopkins. Will the fans show up is the question. Your attendance has been a little light this year at Homewood Field. I think there were only 1,500 for the Michigan game last weekend.
There'll be people there this weekend.
Yeah, no, I'm okay. Take it easy. I know you get all riled up when
Dan
question
Flynn's,
anything Hopkins.
The Flynns are going to the game, you know, so that must be a special occasion.
Making up skipping that Penn Maryland women's game, are you? But this will be a great game. And only, you know, all six teams make the Big Ten tournament. They're doing that model again. But you, fighting for those top two seeds, that is priority because you'd love to have that week off to get healthy, to catch your breath. And, you know, Penn State and Hopkins certainly are well aware of that. And this will be a great game on this game's on ESPNU, I believe.
It is. Yeah, 2 o'clock ESPNU. Sunday, there's a huge game. Biggest game of the weekend. Number 1 Notre Dame takes on number 3 Duke at Koskinen Stadium. Game's at noon. It's on the ACC network. What are your thoughts on this one?
A replay of the national championship game from a year ago. Can't call it a rematch just because the players aren't the same. You guys have graduated, moved on, et cetera. This will be a great game. Duke will be well-rested, knocking off in a dogfight in a monsoon last week against BU, Boston University, pulling it out late, winning that game by 1. And then Notre Dame comes in after beating Syracuse this past weekend in a game. I think what the final was 13-11, but that game was not as close as the final score might indicate. Syracuse showed a tremendous amount of heart fighting back in that game, but Notre Dame had control of that game throughout. You're looking at, like Chris Kavanaugh told us, who's going to guard Brennan O'Neal? Last year in the championship game, it was Conley doing a great job on him. Faceoffs will be big in this game. Goaltending is going to be big in this game. I mean, you've got the first team All-American Liam Entman versus a freshman in Patrick Jameson for Duke. And Arlotta, you want to talk about fans? I mean, Arlotta has been overflowing this year
Yeah, it's been
with,
packed for the Maryland game and the Syracuse game, 5,000, which I think is capacity there.
right. And I think you can expect a similar crowd on Sunday. So this game will be fantastic. And I don't know, man. Who do you got? I know we don't make predictions, but what if you're going on FanDuel, where are you plunking your money down?
I don't know. I don't know what the lines are in this game. Again,
Got to figure
it
Notre
really.
Dame's got to be favored. I would say Notre Dame by 1.5, 2 goals.
Yeah. Close games, though. I'm going to take the home team.
Okay.
I said, we'll see. It'll be a good one. And I look forward to watching this. So find your place to watch these games, get your schedule set, and enjoy the games this weekend. Dix, it's time
And
for the Driven.
don't forget Rutgers at Michigan, 7 o'clock Sunday night, BTN.
That's a great way to cap the weekend, Dix. I love those Sunday
No
night
doubt.
games. Again, like I think I told you. Those Sunday night games, like I have friends who like some text chats and things like that, and they're watching those games on Sunday night. They'll say like, "Oh, I was watching Maryland play Penn State," and they're not usually doing that. So don't put all the games at noon on Saturday. That's my recommendation to the lacrosse, whoever the commissioner of
Intelligentsia.
lacrosse is. Yeah. All right, it's time for this week's Give and Go. Dixie, during the interview with Chris Kavanaugh, you said something that struck me. You were talking about their assistant coaches, and sort of your prelude to the question was mentioning Jerry Byrne, who was a longtime assistant and a well-known assistant when he was at Notre Dame, got his head coaching opportunity that that I'm sure he was offered some other positions, but he's the Harvard coach now. And it got me thinking about those longtime assistants who are very well known throughout the sports world or the lacrosse community, or even maybe we can get into some other sports examples. But who are those guys in lacrosse like Jerry Byrne? Who the one guy that came to my mind is Dave Metzbauer, longtime assistant at Princeton for Bill Tierney, assistant at North Carolina for a long time, and now he's out at Denver. It's just a really well known, well thought of, well respected assistant coach. And then another guy I thought of when a longtime Maryland assistant, Dave Slavkovsky. This is another guy whose name, like again, a guy who I knew as being a longtime assistant coach. Who are some other guys that pop out at you, or current ones that people might think of? And
Wow, good question. You name Coach Metzbauer, you name Coach Slafkovsky. I would maybe point to John Desko at
oh
Syracuse
yeah. Before he
under
was the
Roy
head coach,
Simmons.
he was
Yeah.
Desko's right hand man for a long time, right?
Well,
How
he was
many
Roy
years?
Simmons,
Yes, sorry.
Junior. Yeah.
Roy
Yeah,
Simmons,
right.
right-hand man for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, and then got his head coaching opportunity and won multiple national championships as the head coach at Syracuse. Gosh, who are some others? I mean, currently, obviously, you have Dave Petromala, the national championship coach, assistant at Syracuse last year, currently assistant at North Carolina,
Sure. It's a
defensive
good one.
coordinator.
That's a really good one. I didn't think of that.
I think another one, even though it was an abbreviated stint in the number of, but Bobby Benson,
Oh
when
yeah.
he was the assistant at Maryland, and it was just, because he had been, he's a Johns Hopkins Blue Jay, and to come over and coach at Maryland. But what a lot of our listeners may not know is Dave Slafkovsky is also a Johns Hopkins graduate.
Yeah.
Coach Slaf played for Bob Scott back in the day.
Yeah, Bobby's a good example too of that. Again, Petra was there for a long 20 years at Hopkins, and Seth Tierney and Bill Dwan was another one was there a long time. And Bobby was a very well-known offensive coordinator and then moved over to Maryland before he got his head coaching job at Providence. That's a really good one too.
Trying to think. I mean, it's easier with other sports.
Yeah,
When I
give me
think of
some
the
examples.
NFL, well, I think of Buddy Ryan.
Oh yeah.
He was a defensive coordinator for the 85 Bears, the 46 defense. And I did watch a like a documentary on that team and the defense in particular. And he was just as well known as Ditka. So much to the fact that when they beat the Patriots in that Super Bowl, both he and Mike Ditka got carried off the field. It wasn't just the head coach that got carried off the field.
Yeah,
It was
no,
Buddy Ryan as well.
that's a really good example. Again, he went on to be a head coach of the Eagles and, you know, but well known as an assistant coach, like to the casual sports fan, people knew who Buddy Ryan was. Yeah.
Another name that pops into my head is Tex Winter, longtime assistant to Phil Jackson. Tex Winter instituted the triangle offense that led the Bulls to multiple NBA titles. And I'm not 100% sure, but I think he may have gone with Jackson to LA when he took over the Lakers job and won more NBA championships. So Tex Winter is somebody that I think of.
Yeah, so I'm trying to put these people into like a like what are the characteristics that make an assistant coach shine? Sometimes it's how long they've been there. Certainly it seems to be a running theme here because the head coach has been there a long time. And even sometimes wasn't Dave, did Dave Slavkovsky take he was the assistant when Cottle took over for Dick Adele, right? Didn't he
Yes,
stay on staff?
yes.
So he,
And
like that was
then
continuity there.
Coach Slafkovsky, then I think I don't know if he retired or left the University of Maryland and then became a head coach at Mount St. Joe High
Yeah,
School
in
in
the
the MIAA.
yeah. So again, coaching in the MIA is a pretty high level coaching job. And then sometimes it's the head coach who may be there a long time recognizes the rising star on his staff or her staff and gives that opportunity to either talk to the media or be available or is the main like recruiting face of the program sometimes. And I think that's kind of where Jerry is, where Jerry Byrne was at Notre Dame. But yeah,
I
there
think
seems
you
to be.
think about, I also think, the NFL is a great example. Like when the Cowboys had their success back in the 90s, it was Dave Wannstedt and Norv Turner
Yeah.
were the defensive and offensive coordinators, respectively, and then turned that into a head coaching job. Look at the Ravens from this past season.
Yeah.
Their defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald, now the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, and a couple other, position coaches are now defensive coordinators elsewhere. Eric Bieniemy, who led the Chefs to or helped the Chefs to good success, couldn't turn it into a head coaching job, but then got a major mega payday going over to Washington with the Commanders. Now, of course, he's out because the Commanders have new ownership and they've changed coaches.
Yeah.
So
But he's a good example too of a guy who's very well known. It just again, a lot of these guys just haven't gotten their opportunities yet as a head coach, and they will. The Ravens have been famous for that. The Ravens, I mean, that one that when they won their first Super Bowl, they had Marvin Lewis was on the staff, Jack Del
that's a good
Rio,
one. Rex Ryan was Rex Ryan turned
yeah.
his then as DC defensive coordinator with the Ravens into a head coaching position with the Jets, right?
Yeah, that first Ravens Super Bowl had Kirk Ferentz, who's been the head coach in Iowa for a long
Oh
time.
yeah. He was under Ted Marchabrota.
And there's a, I mean, there was just a ton of guys who you know, coaching. Andy Reid's had a whole bunch of those guys too, who've gone on to be head coaches. Bill
Right.
Belichick's had a ton of guys through the Patriots family who have gone on to be head. I mean, you have success, prominent success, like dynasty type success, you go on, your assistants become famous. So I think that's part of it too.
I'm not as well versed in college basketball, so I'm probably missing, but I think one that comes that just popped into my head was Phil Martelli, who was the head coach at St.
Yeah,
Joe's.
that's
And
true.
then
He was.
he's been, I think he might have been an assistant under John Beilein and then continued as an assistant under Juwan Howard at Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know if he coached with Beilein, but he definitely
Okay.
became Juwan Howard's assistant. And sometimes young coaches will do that, and they'll say, I need like an experienced older guy
Right.
who to, you know, give me some of that wisdom and sage advice. And you see that
Wait a minute.
sometimes.
So stop the presses. Dave Cottle at Navy.
Yeah, there you go. We already mentioned him
I
once.
completely forgot about Coach Cottle, the
Yeah.
offensive coordinator at the Naval Academy now.
Yeah, there you go.
He fits the lacrosse bill.
All right. Good discussion. Don't know why we went there, but that was a good give and go. And it seems like a good place to stop. Big thanks to our guest this week, Chris Kavanaugh. Best of luck to you and the Irish this week and throughout the season. The D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Go check that out. These guys have been great to Dixie and I, and we're very grateful for their sponsorship. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app. Leave a review. Better yet, tell a friend. Share the love. Forward this. It's very easy to forward a podcast link. Just copy the link, send it to a friend, text it to them, let them listen. We love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.